Good afternoon and welcome to Line One, your health connection on KSK Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. Cigarette smoking kills about half of those who use it long term. Cigarette use accounts for about 1 in 5 deaths in the United States each year, and the mortality rates for smokers is 3 times higher than for non-smokers. 70% of smokers say they want to quit, and about half of them had tried to stop in the past year. Despite the fact that trying to come up with any valid reasons to smoke or chew tobacco that are not absurd, millions of people continue to use this toxic substance. How is it possible that rational people would risk their health and life to consume something they wish they could stop using? It sounds absurd when you put it like that, but the reality is that nicotine addiction is a journey into irrational thinking and self-destructive behavior that often ends in a painful and slow descent into death. Joining me today to discuss nicotine addiction and the art of quitting is Anchorage clinical psychologist and smoking cessation expert, Dr. Ron Olson. Dr. Olson received an undergraduate degree in psychology from Colorado University, a divinity degree from Princeton, and a PhD in clinical psychology from Fuller Graduate School. He has been in private practice in Anchorage for over 40 years. Dr. Olson has attained the Award of Diplomat in Clinical Psychology granted by the American Board of Professional Psychology, representing the highest level of excellence and achievement in his field. Dr. Olson specializes in clinical hypnosis and is an approved consultant in clinical hypnosis through the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. His training and practice in this area has enabled him to apply self-hypnosis and relaxation skills to various difficulties that people experience in their lives. Welcome to the show, Dr. Olson. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
I need to take a minute to let people know how to get in touch with us if they have comments or specific questions for Dr. Olson. We can be reached locally by calling 550-8433, or you can call us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way to participate is by emailing your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. That's LINEONE at alaskapublic.org. All right, Dr. Olson, let's start by taking a minute. Let us know a little bit about like who you are and what you've been up to these last 40 years here in Anchorage and why you do what you do.
Well, I have been a licensed clinical psychologist since 1972. And about 30 years ago, Dr. John Watkins came to town to do a training seminar in hypnosis. And I took that seminar with him, and that began my interest and enthusiasm about hypnosis as a specialty. And I've gone to multiple workshops and training sessions throughout the world. And in the process, I became also interested in using hypnosis in my practice. Years ago, I allowed people to smoke in my office.
Wow.
And what I recognized very quickly was that when they came to whatever they were talking about, when they came to a difficult place where there was some emotion, they would reach for the cigarettes and light up, which calmed them down, but it left me with a lung full of secondhand smoke. And so two things I decided. One, I was going to quit letting people smoke in my office because it was probably killing me.
Right.
And the second thing was I was going to figure out a way to help people quit smoking using hypnosis and whatever else techniques I could find. And so that began what now is my program for quitting smoking.
Okay, so you utilize hypnosis in more of an inclusive program that supports smoking cessation is
right.
Kind of
right.
Another way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, we're going to get into, I guess, a little bit more about the nuts and bolts of like how people quit, what kind of strategies they use, and what kind of things are available. We'll get into more of that later, the second half of the show. But for now, so you've been in practice for what other kind of things do you apply in your practice day to day? It's not just smoking that you do. You mentioned when we were off air, you apply these hypnosis principles to other areas and other problems.
I also use hypnosis from time to time with people that are in individual therapy and sometimes with couples, just to help them to get more focused, relaxed, and to try to utilize our unconscious mind to help them in some way. years and years ago, it was hypothesized that we have a conscious mind and an unconscious mind. And hypnosis is really based upon the fact that when a person is hypnotized, you can embed suggestions in their unconscious mind that will help them in their conscious mind later on, what they call post-hypnotic suggestions. And I've used that from time to time, either with direct hypnosis or indirect hypnosis, which is a little different kind of way of working.
All right. So for the listeners who are out there just kind of, I'm sure we all have the idea of like hypnosis. You mentioned stage hypnosis earlier versus clinical hypnosis. And so somebody that comes to you, like the clucking like a chicken thing, is that, you know, if I say tomato, you're going to cluck like a chicken. Is that a real thing? That's not what you do. That's not what clinical hypnosis is based on. So can you describe the mechanism a little bit or how it works?
Well, yeah, when people come, their main worry is that I'll somehow take control of them and make them do something they don't want to do. And that's one of the big myths about hypnosis. And realistically, a hypnotist or a hypnotherapist can't make you do anything against your will. What people end up doing is they do things that they would kind of like to do secretly. They're exhibitionistic, or they want to show off, or they're, some people are just very, very suggestible. And they'll go along with almost any suggestion. About 10% of the population is highly suggestible. And hypnosis can do a lot of things with them.
There really seems to be some power behind it for certain folks. Are there folks, you just triggered a question, are there folks that you can't hypnotize, they're just too resistant, they can't go to that place in their mind of relaxation?
Well, about 10% of the population really is very resistant to hypnosis, and that includes people with very low IQs have a hard time. People that are paranoid or criminals, they need to be in control, and so they're very reluctant to let anybody even give them suggestions.
Right, much less put them in a relaxed state where their mind is open to ideas.
Right.
All right, so how do you utilize it with smoking, say? For example?
Well, what I do is I want to use hypnosis to help people engage their unconscious mind to help them quit this very difficult and dangerous drug. And so what I do is I invite them into a very pleasant, relaxed, hypnotic state, and I'll give them suggestions that they can either go along with or not go along with. They're in control. They never lose control. And then I figure out some ways to help them prepare themselves for actual quitting. I do two sessions. First session, we look at the smoking behavior so I can get an idea about how to customize my suggestions for that particular person. And then in between the first and second session, I'll have them do some preparatory work for the second session. And that involves grieving the loss of their old friend, tobacco. And this, doing it this way, the second session, I'll hypnotize them and give them suggestions for quitting. And then I follow up with them by having them call my office every day for 3 weeks to let me know they're quit.
That's the accountability
piece? That's
the
accountability part. And it's very effective. My effectiveness, as far as I can tell, is much greater than the overall national norm for smoking cessation programs, even with hypnosis.
Which is what?
About 8%.
About 8%?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Every once in a while, we'll find somebody, some hypnotist coming to town, and there are big ads in the paper that says, stop smoking. And he'll get a bunch of people together in a room and give them suggestions for
stopping. At the Marriott?
Yeah, something like that.
All right.
And give them suggestions for stopping. And I have actually met people in my practice that have actually quit in those sessions. But for the most part, they don't quit. And they're, you know, the people that quit are about 8%, about normal, because they don't get a chance to really process, and they don't get a chance to grieve the loss of their cigarette or their tobacco or their nicotine or whatever. And the other thing is that they really are talking about stopping smoking, where I never talk about stopping. I talk about quitting, and there's a big difference. You know, you and I drove over here today. We stopped and started many times. We didn't quit, or we wouldn't be here right now.
Correct.
So it's changing your thought processes and your language is really important in the process of quitting smoking.
Now, people might, that sounds a little silly, like grieving the loss of your friend, nicotine, something that stinks and smells bad and causes all sorts of adverse health effects. That sounds sort of silly, like grieving the loss of that, but there's a lot of truth to that.
There really is, because it's been a reliable old friend in terms of whatever it is that they use that smoking for. There are many different reasons why people smoke, and whatever it is, they need to say goodbye to that. And so I give them time to say goodbye and grieve that loss, and then they're more ready to quit.
Yeah, that's a hard thing to wrap your brain around. You seems like you'd be so excited to quit and you just walk away from it and then you'd be done.
Yeah.
But it's not that. So that gets us into some other questions that I have. Really talk about some of the psychosocial emotional consequences of tobacco use. Like, what are some of the problems that occur with tobacco use from a social standpoint or a psychological standpoint? What are the adverse consequences?
Well, the main problem with using nicotine or tobacco is health problems, addiction and health problems. The nicotine is highly addictive, and at the same time, tobacco has over 4,000 different chemicals in it that when you smoke it, it has a lot of deleterious and difficult impacts on our bodies. And it, for example, just carbon monoxide alone, when you light up and smoke, you're inhaling carbon monoxide, which will, if you breathe your car's exhaust pipe, it'll get you high temporarily.
Before it kills you?
Yeah, yeah. And that may be part of the high you get from tobacco, but there's a lot of different factors in smoking. Some people are addicted to just to putting a cigarette in their mouth is a real important thing for them, and maybe satisfies some old ancient need that they have. And others just like something to mess with, fool around with. Pipe smokers are.
Something to fiddle with in their hands. And
yeah, pipe smokers are constantly messing with their pipes and their tobacco and everything. But
okay, so now what you're getting into is the psychological component of addiction.
Yeah.
And I'd like to go there next. Before we go there, though, I'd like to talk a little bit about what's the physiological impact of how does it addict you? What is the addictive process? What creates that craving and that need that is not rational and not reasonable?
What happens is that nicotine has the ability to piggyback an important neurotransmitter in our brain called acetylcholine. And it binds with that and piggybacks with it, and then it gets in through. It's like acetylcholine has a standard door that everybody has in the brain cells. That door is then open to what they call the dopamine producers of the brain. Dopamine is a pleasure drug that creates a wonderful feeling of relaxation. And nicotine binds to the acetylcholine and gets into there and then activates the release of dopamine, which then you get a nice, pleasant reaction to it.
Dopamine's what releases when we have sex, when we eat food, when we drink water, anything that satisfies, right?
Right, right.
Okay.
Nicotine also has the ability to bind itself with what they call the D5 receptor of the dopamine process. And so it not only piggybacks with acetylcholine because it has its own door that it can go through. And the difficulty with that is that when you decide to quit and you shut those doors and take the nicotine out, then your brain has to figure out how to deal with that and how to create that pleasure and release that dopamine without those doors and those stimulants making it happen.
So essentially you're shutting down your release of dopamine when you stop to a great extent, and then that sounds like a physiological sort of state of depression or anxiety, which is known also as withdrawal, correct?
Right.
It's nicotine withdrawal.
Right. And it creates all kinds of physiological problems, anxiety, depression, causes headaches, sometimes stomach problems.
Irritability. My clients all the time say, I wish he would just start smoking again, or I wish he'd take a dip again because he's intolerable.
Yeah. Yeah. And that lasts for, usually when I have people quit smoking, I tell them that the smoking, the nicotine will metabolize out of their system within 3 days. And after that, it's a matter of trying to get the brain to rewire itself to release its own dopamine for different reasons. And that's what recovery is about. It's about getting the brain to take on the process of producing its own dopamine.
I read once where somebody said that recovery from any addiction is really about making the ordinary extraordinary again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what you're talking about, is the dopamine receptors aren't released under normal pleasurable experiences, like maybe spending time with your daughter. I mean, they're waiting for that nicotine fix.
Right.
And so that becomes the thing rather than the simple, ordinary pleasures of life every day.
Right.
And that's addiction.
Right. Right. And some people then start to focus on trying to avoid the pain of withdrawal. And that's even worse than the pleasure of smoking. So it has a double effect.
And then you're no longer smoking for the pleasure, you're smoking to avoid pain.
Right.
Which is a slippery slope. For those of you who might be tuning in late, my guest is Anchorage psychologist Dr. Ron Olson. We are discussing nicotine addiction and the challenges associated with quitting tobacco use. I want to remind our listeners that you can be reach us with your questions or comments in three ways. The local number is 550-8433. You can reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And as always, you can email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. Please call in fairly early if you have any questions for our expert about smoking or stopping smoking, and we'll get you on the air as quickly as we can. So we discussed a little bit about the mechanism. It sets it up. I read also in doing research for this that it tricks the brain, this is the good way that somebody described it, into thinking that your subconscious or your unconscious, what you were talking about, into thinking of nicotine sort of like food and water. Like it becomes necessary for survival at the base layer of your brain.
Yeah, I think that's true of all addictive substances. It tricks your brain into believing that. And the task then is you got to rewire your brain. And literally rewire, create new pathways in your brain that are more effective. Because your brain gradually learns to rely solely on the nicotine or the cocaine or whatever it is and forgets about the other things in the world. And the focus then becomes on relieving that pain through nicotine.
That's where you get the ah. Yeah. In life, yeah. Is from nicotine.
Yeah.
And that becomes really the only source ultimately, or if you have other addictive behaviors as well.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Interesting. And very complicated. So psychologically, you said nicotine's processed out of your system. It's gone. It's done, right? In how long? 3 days. I read somewhere else that a week to 2 weeks, and really there aren't any physiological. You've sort of returned physiologically to your previous state, like blood pressure comes down.
Right.
Can you speak to that? Like what happens after the first 2 weeks of nicotine cessation?
Yeah, the half-life for nicotine is about 16 hours, but it takes a while to get all the different things that are operating out of your system. And then you're left with being your normal self, and yet at the same time, you're not normal. You've been impacted by this loss of the drug. And so that's when cravings start to come on. The cravings have to do with trying to regain the balance that nicotine had created in your brain. And it's when it's an imbalance, then you're not doing well. You're not thinking well. Your brain is fogged up, and your body hurts, and you get headaches, and it's not good.
Sounds really pleasant.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the good news is it's short term.
Mm-hmm.
And that if you can push through that initial phase, then you can get some relief from that. And then it's really about maintenance, which we'll get into later. All right. I have a first phone call, and I want Larry, you're on the air. What can we do for you?
Well, thank you so much. Two things. One, I've got a comment I want to share with you, my stop smoking story, very brief. And then I want to ask the good doctor his suggestion or advice on the whole aspect of area of how to change behavior or how to break bad habits. My very quick stop smoking story, about 40 years ago, I smoked. I was in high school, whatever. Even though I know smoke was terrible, I read some work by the famous Harvard psychiatrist B.F. Skinner, Behavior Modification. I bought the worst cigarette I could imagine. Back then, they were, unfiltered Camels. I put 6 cigarettes in my mouth at one time, lit them up in front of a mirror, choked you the whole 9 yards. As I'm doing this, I'm telling myself in front of the mirror, you're a jerk, this is what cigarettes are doing to you. Did it one more time. After that, did not smoke. I will say I had withdrawals for about a couple of weeks, but the longer I do without them, the easier it became.
That sounds like Clockwork Orange sort of aversion therapy, like, or your dad would take you into a closet when he caught you with chew and make you eat the whole can, and then you'd throw up for, 12 hours.
Yeah.
Well, something like that, yes. But also, Tim, I think this also gets into the whole area of behavior modification. Behavior change. I want to ask the doctor if he can give us any kind of guidance as to how to modify or change our behaviors.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Thanks for the call, Larry. I appreciate you taking the time to call in.
Thanks.
All right. So, good doctor, any information on how to change our behaviors real quickly? Another radio show, probably.
Yeah, well, it's a whole semester in college, right, talking about doing that. But in a nutshell, it's about deciding what your new behavior is, practicing it, and then rewarding yourself with something really positive, and doing a lot of positive self-talk. You manage to quit using negative self-talk, and then that's effective with some people. But it's best if you can maximize the reward aspect of what it is you want to do. So create new behaviors, practice them, and reward yourself in the process.
Part of what you were talking about before was we were talking about the physiological addiction, and you mentioned the psychological addiction and the pairing up with activities and your life and the associations. Can you speak to a little bit about the strength of that from a psychological perspective and how that carries on well beyond the physiological piece?
That's true. One of the things I encourage people to do is break up those pairs of associated behaviors. Like if you're smoking and enjoying TV at the same time, you don't want to be smoking while you're watching TV, so you want to smoke in a whole different area while you're trying to quit and start breaking up those pairs. A lot of people smoke and eat at the same time. And I'll never forget the scene I saw in Mexico one time where a woman she was eating a sandwich and she had cigarettes in both hands, both fingers.
Wow.
She'd take a bite and take a puff of tobacco. And it was really sad to see that, but she was a an example of what happens when you pair two things that are pleasurable.
All right, so the psychological piece of it, the pairing of it, I think of, you know, like if you are a chewer and you chew while you fish and you, or you smoke while you fish and you smoke while you work in the yard or you do things like that. If it's paired up with just about everything in your life, then what you're talking about is isolating it?
Yeah, breaking up those pairs, isolating it. And I teach people to, if they're going to, while they're trying to quit, begin smoking in only one place and have a pure smoking experience, but only one place. And then one place at home, one place at work, not with the other smokers. And when they're driving the car, to decide you're going to smoke halfway, either the first half or the second half of where you're going, unless you're going to Seattle. But breaking it down that way so where you feel like you got a sense of control by isolating it.
Oh, that's really interesting. I've never heard anybody look at it like that, but I like that. You're sort of making smoking just about smoking.
Right.
Not pairing it up with socially, drinking. I mean, that's most people's part. Big part of the problem with quitting is the social aspect of it and going out, and their lives are tied to it in many, many ways.
Yeah. On the other hand, because of the social, negative social observations and opinions about smoking, there are fewer and fewer people smoking now. They're starting to quit because it's just not socially acceptable anymore. It used to be, when I grew up, all the heroes smoked.
Yes.
Now, none of them do.
The Marlboro Man and that crowd. Yeah. I talked to my nanny today, and I asked her about smoking and, you know, young people, and she mentioned that it's just not that cool anymore. Like, nobody in her crowd, at least the kids who are on their way and on track, it's just not something that people who care about themselves. So that's good news.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's, I read also that there's more people in the U.S. who have quit than who smoke.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good news too, that this is overcomable, if that's, is that a word, overcomable?
I think we just made it.
It should be. All right. We're getting close to our break, so I think we'll go ahead and take that now. I want to remind listeners that you are tuned in to Line 1, Your Health Connection on FM 91.1 KSKA Anchorage. Our local phone number is 550-8433. Our toll-free number is 1-888-353-5752. And our email is line1@alaskapublic.org. After this short break, I'll return with the story of my own struggle with nicotine addiction. We're going to take a little turn in the show. And we'll have Dr. Olson assist me in the development of sort of like a quick quit plan. So tune in after the break, and I'll tell you about that. I am your host, Prentice Pemberton.
You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line 1, Your Health Connection on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Line 1, Your Health Connection from KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. If you are just joining us, I have in studio Anchorage psychologist Dr. Ron Olson. We are discussing nicotine addiction and the challenges of quitting. I want to remind listeners that Dr. Woodard will continue to bring you the latest health information on Line 1 three Mondays every month, and I will host a monthly show dedicated to mental and emotional health. I also want to remind listeners, you can podcast today's show and all of our Line 1 archives by visiting our website. That's alaskapublic.org, and by clicking on the link to Line 1. There you can browse through a wide range of topics on emotional and physical health. It's a really good library. Today's show, if you link on that page, it has a lot of information that links to smoking information and cessation sort of stuff. You can find some resources on health effects and how to quit. So check that out a little bit. Remember, you can email questions or comments to today's topic to line1@alaskapublic.org. You can call us locally at 550-8433. Call toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And please remember, if you're listening between 9 and 10 p.m. Tonight, you will be listening to a tape recording, and will not be accepting phone calls. So before the break, I mentioned my own battle with nicotine, and I want to start off the second half of the show with that. Just sort of a statement of intent, because part of this process and part of what this show is about is my own desire to stop doing something that has been really difficult for a long time for me. So I'm just going to take a few minutes to go through this, and then we'll talk to Dr. Olson about what he thinks. My story is really not very different than millions of others. It sort of started by chewing tobacco a few times with my great-grandfather as a child. On the farm, I remember riding around the tractor and him giving me a little chew to put in my mouth and between my cheek and gum, and that caused a little excitement, and I felt really grown up and really important. That was my first experience. By my freshman year in high school, I'd already experimented with peers in junior high, and I think I was well on my way to the regular use of smokeless tobacco. Other names like include dip, chew, snuff, things like that. And despite my parents' best efforts, they would do things like finding me, grounding me. My addiction was really in full swing by the end of my 10th grade year. I was one of those kids that was a three-sport athlete and was always involved in some sort of athletic endeavor, and the environment really supported and glorified its use. We looked sort of down on the smokers and believed that chewing was a healthy alternative that would not harm athletic performance or result in any significant adverse conditions. I fully intended to quit as an adult and really did not understand why my parents were making such a big deal out of it. I just thought, once I get to adulthood, I'm going to wrap this thing up. That would be silly to continue. Numerous lifetime milestones came and went. Needless to say, each a new opportunity to kick the habit. High school graduation was my first attempt, followed by college graduation. My first marriage, divorce, turning 25, moving to Alaska, getting married, having a baby, a second baby, a third baby. You kind of get the idea. It was always some other opportunity to quit somewhere in the future. Thoughts of quitting are the nicotine addict's constant companion, and it's been really no different for me. Then about a month ago, my mother sent me a link to a story about Tony Gwynn dying of oral cancer. I thought to myself, Tony frickin' Gwynn, for real? No way. Mr. Padre, top 20 all-time in hits and career average, 8-time batting champ who hit for a .338 average over a 20-year career, all-time good guy who had it said of him that he was a better man than he was a hitter, and he was the best hitter of a generation, dead at 54 of a cancer that he blamed on tobacco use. I found myself reading everything I could on his battle with cancer. I took solace in his doctor's statement that his cancer was not likely connected to tobacco use, and used it as an excuse to push back the terror that Tony Gwynn's death had seeded in my mind. But that seed was already planted. Not a day has gone by. That's the freaky thing about this. Not a day has gone by. Not a dip has been taken by me since that email that I have not imagined Tony Gwynn and his universally loved personality, and thought to myself, this could really end in a sad way. The idea for this show was really kind of born in that moment when I let my guard down and allow myself to feel a hint of the magnitude that a bad outcome to my tobacco use would have on my family. The resulting emotion borders on panic. It really kind of freaks me out a little bit. I'm usually pretty good at defending against that. But I have three young daughters to role model for and a wife who depends on me to help raise them into adulthood. I also think about the fact that my job centers on helping people face their fears and encouraging them to tackle difficult change. What better way is there to impress upon people the validity of my advice than to take it myself? Part of this disclosure process for me today is about the opportunity it brings to normalize the struggle. and to encourage people to consider to change a change sooner rather than later if this is a health concern that they're struggling with. My decision to quit is based on my desire to choreograph really the rest of my story to the best of my ability and on my strong aversion to having my face cut off or dying young. Continuing to use tobacco products is an irresponsible risk on many levels and sets a poor example for my children and for the young people I work to inspire. I'm quitting in the hopes that I can avoid having my death or horrific disfigurement inspire some other young man to quit smoking or chewing like the tragic death of Mr. Gwynn has inspired me. That is my truth. So now, Dr. Olson, you kind of have the story. I'm a tough nut with lots of failed attempts under my belt, and I'd kind of like to take just a few minutes to go through with you what I'm planning to do and help get your like kind of feedback on how I tackle this beast again.
Okay. You want to do that or you want me to talk?
Thoughts.
Thoughts that I might have?
Yeah, from you right now.
Well, the first thing that you're doing, it's very important, is that you're making a decision to quit, and you're setting a time for that. A lot of people say, oh, I ought to quit this, and I really want to quit this, but they don't set a time, I'm going to quit by such and such a time.
Right.
And using the word quit rather than stop. I noticed you used stop a little earlier today. I want you to start using quit, because that's your goal, that's your task.
I want to be done.
Yeah, yeah. And then it'd be a good idea for you to sit down sometime and write down a list of reasons why you want to quit. Because that's as you write a reason, it's like setting goals, and research has shown that 80% of the people that write down their goals achieve them, whereas if you don't write your goals down, you only achieve them 20% of the time. So write down your reasons for quitting, and then use the power of your mind to imagine the outcome when you're done. Picture in your mind you being right, healthy, enjoying your family, just being the person you want to be, and picture that in your mind and use that powerful connection with your unconscious to keep that going.
That sounds like what athletes do when they visualize success.
Exactly.
When they visualize achievement and being successful. Okay, so my habit, 14 years old, the classic story of the kid who got caught up in it, and it just never kind of, it never came to a good time to quit. And that's the thing I've discovered about this thing is there's never a good time.
Never a good time.
Never a time when it's going to feel like, oh yeah, this is a good day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I understand part of like successful quit plan is discussing your intentions with family and friends and asking for their support and assistance. I'm wondering, does this qualify?
You hit the home run. You asked the whole community
right,
to be involved in this.
And now I really better like...
You better come through. You got a lot of people watching you, which is good. That's the accountability side.
That's a lot of accountability. Maybe I should have thought this through a little bit sooner,
yeah,
a little bit better.
Yeah.
But I really am motivated to quit, and that's
good.
Something I've been thinking about for a long time, and it's where I'm at. So I'll tell you what I've done so far. I picked a quit date, you mentioned that, and I've let family and friends know, and people, and the people at KSKA know now, right? And my people at work are going to know now, my clients are going to know now, and everybody's going to know now, so
great.
There's not much of an excuse. So Wednesday, July 23rd at 9:30 p.m., that's my plan.
Okay. Now, my thought about that is you don't have too much time to grieve the loss of your old friend that you've had around since. So here's what I'd suggest you do to start that process before you quit, is every time you take that can out and you start to do a dip, you've already started thinking about Tony Gwynn.
Yeah.
That's really powerful. That's in your unconscious, and you can't get rid of that. The other thing I would suggest that you do is talk to that can and say, okay, I'm saying goodbye. I'm letting go. I thought you were my friend, but you're really not good for me, and you're going to hurt me over the long run. And I don't want to end up like Tony Gwynn, so I'm saying goodbye. And then go ahead and dip if you want to. All right? So you're starting that process every time you dip. All right? That starts the process of saying goodbye. Then the next step is to create what you're going to say hello to. So, because if you say goodbye, you want to be saying hello. And so in your mind, you need to develop a new metaphor for you without tobacco. And picture in your mind you being free of tobacco. Picture that and picture it every time you say goodbye, then say, and I'm saying hello to you. All right? That gets you into that process of letting go, grieving the loss, and saying hello to something new. It also, interestingly enough, that's how we change our brain. You need to rewire your brain. And so part of the rewiring process is using the power of your imagination and the power of your self-talk to start new wiring in your brain. How are we doing?
Part of the reason that I picked, and it does seem quick, but I've been thinking about this for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I have had some success before, which is one of my resources. I've quit a lot of things that I've picked up and things that I have quit and not just stopped, right?
Yes.
I'm a flawed human being. I've had a history. I've worked really hard to overcome things. At one point, I was 80 pounds heavier, and you know, I've overcome that and worked really hard. So I know that's this. When you tap into the resources, I know that I have the ability to achieve things that I put my mind to.
Mm-hmm.
But this nicotine thing, mm-hmm. like you said, it's something that's been with me since I was forming my adulthood, and that's the scary part. I found in talking to this young lady and getting off topic for a second, she said that smoking is not cool, but the thing that scares me about chewing is that it's still considered a safe alternative for mm-hmm. a lot of teenagers, especially teenage boys who are athletes. And one of the things I asked her, I said, do the boys still chew? And she says, oh yeah, the boys chew and the girls all think it's gross. So that dynamic has not changed since I was in high school.
It's not a deterrent to the boys for the girls to think it's gross. They still do it.
Right, because it's not considered as taboo as smoking or something like that.
Right.
All right, so I've also decided that a part of this, and see what you think about this, is that I'm going on a 2-week vacation to Canada. I'm going to sit in an island with my family, my parents. And so it seems like the perfect place to sort of separate myself and eliminate this thing and sort of like an opportunity to grieve that loss, isolated and with people that love me and support me and no real temptation. Part of recovery from addiction is changing people, places, and things, right? I mean, it's sort of like, should this be approached sort of like alcoholism or drug dependence, since it is essentially drug dependence?
It's the same sort of thing. Yes, it should be. So you'll have to go through a withdrawal period on that island. So you may want to think about utilizing other resources in this critical time of letting go, saying goodbye, and metabolizing that stuff out of your system, and getting your brain started rewiring.
Other resources by meaning what?
There's medical, pharmacological resources. You know, think about using a nicotine replacement product of some kind. There's patches.
Right.
There's lozenges that you can use that would be helpful. And there's also drugs that have been shown to be somewhat helpful for...
Yeah, there's some new ones out, right?
Well, the only one that I know of is Chantix.
Right.
It's been pretty well researched and demonstrated. What it does is it causes the door to the dopamine molecule to be closed off so that nicotine isn't as effective with it anymore. And you gradually get disinterested in it. And it also has the other effect of sort of calming you down. The other drug is Wellbutrin, which
right.
has been used for a long period of time.
Marketed as Xanax for smoking, isn't it?
Zyban is what
Zyban, that's what it
right.
was. Sorry, not Xanax. Yeah,
right.
That's something different.
Yeah. And that's been helpful for some people. Where it hasn't been helpful is when people take it and wonder why they haven't quit smoking, because they haven't done all the other stuff associated with it. So using that in conjunction with your support and your physician's guide, and you're using a good diet plan, and having a backup plan where you learn to change your mind, change your body,
right,
by changing the way you breathe. There's a very effective way of coping with those cravings by taking a really deep breath, hold it to a count of four, and let it out to a count of eight. And what that does is changes the vagus nerve in your heart to calm you down. And the calming process is in letting go. It sort of alerts you, and then it calms you down.
Because anxiety triggers nicotine,
sure,
desire. And so the more that you're saying, the more that you can calm yourself and deal with those underlying emotional things.
That's true.
The better you can cope with those cravings.
That's true.
And cravings pass, right?
They do, especially if you don't pay attention
right.
to them. If you reward them, they keep going.
If you feed them.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So you're suggesting a kitchen sink approach to quitting nicotine, sort of like throw everything out of the resources, everything you got, or try some things. And then if that doesn't work, try something different.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I would use all the resources you can think of right now, especially for the kind of nicotine that you're using. It's more powerful than cigarettes even. So you're withdrawing from something that's a little bit more powerful. And so you want to use all those resources possible.
Now, so you have heard the same thing I have, that quitting chewing is actually more difficult than quitting smoking.
It is. It is.
And for those of you out there who are listening who want to quit smoking, a great resource, which I didn't get on the website, is it's called Kill the Can. And I think it's .org or .com, but maybe Dave will add that on there, Kill the Can. And it's got tons of information on chewing tobacco, which I think is really an important resource for kids to understand that this is not a safe alternative. And my story should scare like adults. And this is what my parents told me over and over again, that this is a scary thing that can get you for life, even if you don't want it to. And it's really gotten a hold of me. And, you know, the more I think about this, and the more I think about the kids that are doing it in my office, and all the folks that are out there, we really, as a community, should be aware of chewing as a real health concern for young males, especially in athletics, and the importance of setting that modeling. So kind of what I've decided on is I'm going to do like the patches for a couple weeks and try my luck at perhaps I could come see you for some relaxation and hypnosis kind of stuff for a few sessions and see how that works. And then I want to keep people posted here online about my progress and the things I've done that have worked. And if I struggle, I was joking about it earlier, but if I struggle, I want to be able to talk about that too.
Good. Good. So you're taking advantage of professional help. And there's a Nicotine Anonymous group in town.
Is there in town?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was wondering about that because I did, in the research, found lots of Nicotine Anonymous
yeah.
kind of support groups, but I didn't know what was done locally.
Yeah, it's hard to find, and I don't happen to have the...
There's like four people there, probably.
Yeah. And they're mainly talking about smoking control, but they use a 12-step process to do that.
Which is where the alcohol addiction and Narcotics Anonymous and nicotine
right.
and overeating and gambling
right.
and all of this stuff, this addictive process seems to be treated with like sort of this awareness and this 12-step model of
what they call social facilitation, where you've got a group of people who are going through the same thing, supporting you and cheering for you.
Yeah. And in absence of that, though, it can still, there's online mm-hmm. support networks, and that's one of the Kill the Can website that I was on had some resources that where they were blogs, people talked about it and people offered support. And it's there are some online communities that you can get support that are pretty helpful if you access them.
That would be helpful.
It's all about putting your mind to it, I think, and sticking to it. All right. So I want to remind listeners that you can reach us with your questions or comments in three ways. The local phone number is 550-8433, toll-free at 1-888-888-353-5752, or email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. Get those in quick because we only got a few minutes left in our hour here with Dr. Olson. So if you have a question for the good doctor, please give us a call. All right. I guess the last thing I'd like to talk about is if someone wants to quit, and we've kind of gone over this with me a little bit, but if someone's just in the infancy of thinking about this thing and they want to decide to tackle stopping, what's the first place to start? Where should they start?
Well, I would start finding out about getting all the information you can. And this morning's paper had a half-page ad from the Center for Disease Control or
CDC,
something.
CDC, yeah.
That had a phone number you can call, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
The quit line.
And it's a quit line, and they also have then access, gives you access to other resources that you can get. In addition, there's lots of information that you need, so get information first. As much as possible. And then seek out some help from somebody, either somebody that's been successful with quitting, and find out how they did it and use them as a model or what we call a metaphor.
Kind of like a sponsor, huh?
Yeah.
In AA.
Yeah. In hypnosis, we call those metaphors. You create a metaphor for what you want and for what works for you, and you make that metaphor, you create that, and your unconscious remembers that.
Okay, we got a caller in. Max, you're on with Dr. Olson.
Hi, good afternoon. I am Max, and are you gentlemen there?
Yes, we are here.
Okay, I have two ideas that I would like to voice because I am a very proud smoker who quit successfully about 20 years ago. I still remember the last cigarette I had, and I still remember how I successfully quit. So can I share that with you?
Briefly, yes, please do.
All right. The first thing I will say to you is to remember you can always resist one impulse. In your life, you're a professional. You've always had situations where, oh, man, there was a temptation. You can always resist one. So look at the next impulse as only one and resist it. The most important second issue is, though, find something very unattractive you can relate to about your habit. For me, it was seeing people with a cigarette hanging out of their mouth or being around cigarettes in restaurants. I bet you can think of guys that you met that had lost some teeth or their teeth were real ugly or even had a little drool down their chin that was stained with tobacco and think to yourself, do I want to look like that?
That's very unappealing.
Yeah.
That is a wonderful source of pride. You're a professional man. I think that that's the kind of thing that will help you get a hold of, man, that's a good reason not to do that stuff because of what that guy looks like, and I don't want to.
All right. I appreciate that call. I appreciate that that approach. I will apply it to myself. I think that's good advice.
Okay, man. Take care. Good
Thanks.
Luck. Have a great
Thanks,
trip.
Max. I have Damon on the air.
Hi.
Hey.
How's it going?
All right. For
All
full
right.
disclosure.
Congratulations on your effort today.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I had a specific question for Dr. Olson.
All right.
I was wondering if I've tried mint substitute for chewing as a kind of substitute for the act, but a part of me is concerned that that is just kind of it's continuing the association and the that it's not solving the problem. It's just kind of masking the situation. And so I wonder if substitutes for tobacco are a good idea, or if it's kind of a false sense of security, so to speak.
Okay. I think you need to see that as a middle step in your quitting. There are some people that can quit. They just, for some reason, they just say, I quit, and they do it. Some people need more than that, need a little longer time. And sometimes it's recommended that you get some tea leaves and chew on tea leaves. And so you can spit it out and get rid of it that way. It's a little bit similar. And that's okay, because every moment you're stating to yourself, this is only temporary. I am quitting. I'm saying goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Appreciate the call.
No way.
All right, bye. Full disclosure, that was Damon Pemberton, my brother. And at least I got one person that's listening, family and friends. Also, I'm sure he won't mind me sharing somebody, like, that's one of my bad feelings from my chewing, is I sort of introduced my little brother to that, which is something that feels bad. And he's successfully quit, so good for him. And shout out. Yeah, good job, bro. Appreciate the call. So, Dr. Olson, we're out of time. I'd like for you to give us something to think about, a last parting thought or something you'd like for people to imagine or take from the show today.
I have one more suggestion for you. There's an app that you can get on your phone called Alarmed.
All right.
You can program that to give you an alarm every half hour, every hour. And what I'd suggest you do is program that to remind you, and when it goes off, I want you to close your eyes and picture yourself. Take a deep breath. Let that breath out and picture yourself as a non-chewer, as a successful and victorious non-chewer.
Once an hour.
At least once an hour. How's that sound?
That sounds
achievable.
Great.
Achievable.
I will try it. I will set my phone. I have an alarm that can go mm-hmm. off every hour.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be pairing it up with something new. Okay, we are running out of time. My thanks to today's guest, Dr. Ron Olson. If you would like to continue today's conversation, you can join KSK on Facebook. You can find the link on our website at alaskapublic.org, and you can let us know your thoughts about today's show at our email address. That's line1@alaskapublic.org. We welcome any and all feedback. One thought keeps coming back to my mind when it comes to deciding to quit. There's never going to be a time when my addictive brain will want to quit right now. And as far as I know, I am stuck in a perpetual state of existing right now. I will keep you posted on how this goes. Health literacy is the ability to obtain, read, understand, and use health-related information to navigate the healthcare system and to make informed decisions about medical care. On the next Line One, Dr. Woodard will be joined by Drs. Rhonda Johnson of UAA and Barry Weiss of the University of Arizona. They will be discussing health literacy in the U.S. So why not tune in and learn more Monday, July 28th at 2 p.m., repeating that same evening at 9 p.m. on FM 91.1. KSKA Anchorage. Pat Yak is the Chief Content Officer for Public Media. Dave Waldron is our web editor and audio engineer for today's show. For my guests and everyone, thanks for listening. I'm Prentice Pemberton. Have a great day.
Of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line 1 and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.